You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon and specialist food retailers.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Hello, welcome to A Slice of Cheese, the Food FM radio series that celebrates the world of cheese. I'm Jenny Linford, a food writer and cheese enthusiast, the author of Great British Cheeses. Cheeses are delicious and fascinating food, and we're setting out to explore this remarkable food and share the stories of the people who make, sell and love it. This year, the World Cheese Awards will take place in Trondheim, Norway, so timely moment to look at the world of Scandinavian cheese. Food writer Signe Johansson, author of two appetising Scandalicious cookbooks, sets the scene for us. We talk to two notable Norwegian cheesemakers whose cheeses have each won Supreme Champion at previous World Cheese Awards, Kristin Vagen of Tingvollost and Magnus Hafslund of Östergarden. Finally, Bernt Bucher Johansson of Hanen, a Norwegian trade organisation for rural farm produce, discusses the Norwegian cheese scene and why he wanted the World Cheese Awards to come to Norway.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
Well, this week on A Slice of Cheese, very happy to have with me today Signe Johansson, a food writer and author of a number of books, including two Scandalicious cookbooks and Smorgasbord. Good morning, Signe.
Good morning, Jenny.
So nice to be talking to you about cheese in Scandinavia, because it's something I don't know very much about. And obviously, given that you are Norwegian and a food writer, I thought you are the perfect person to guide me. Is cheese beloved in Scandinavia?
Well, it's beloved. It's thought to date back to the Viking era. So around 800 AD, dairy production became part of that sort of pastoral life, I suppose. And, you know, obviously we know that cheese, being an incredibly nutritious product, also stores very well. So, you know, very early on when it came about, it was obviously a vital source of nutrition, particularly throughout the winter months. You know, we know that the vitamin D and the calcium is essential to get us through winter. So it was the perfect product, really, for cold, battle hardened Vikings to make in their, you know, when they were not marauding and pillaging and looting.
They were eating cheese. This is a good image.
They were making some cheese. And so it has quite a long history, and not as obviously a long history as the original source of cheese production. We produce a lot of cheese in the Scandinavian region. Denmark is by far the biggest producer in terms of, I think, something like 78 kilos of cheese are produced per person, per Danish person, which is extraordinary when you think about it. That's a lot of cheese. And Norway is a little bit further behind, but still quite up per capita, very, very comfortable with our cheese consumption. We have a lot of cheese. So it is a big part of the food culture. It has deep historic roots. There are slight variations, obviously, between the different countries.
Is cheese made primarily with cow's milk in Scandinavia, or is there, or was it sort of sheep and goats and cows?
All three, yeah. So from what I understand, I think cows was more of a modern development. Mm-hmm. So partly, particularly in Norway, where, there's not much arable land. It's a very, very mountainous country, as you know. And I believe that in Denmark and Sweden, there's perhaps a longer tradition of using cow's milk for dairy products, not just cheese, obviously, but for sort of soured milks and creams and butter, et cetera.
Yes.
So, all three are still in use, and they have been historically, but I would say cows is probably the most modern variety.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's interesting. And obviously, I've been sort of broad brushing Scandinavia, but you know, they're different countries. perhaps you could take us on a little tour, Signe. How are they sort of characteristic cheeses? I mean, perhaps we should start with Norway, which is your own
country? Is there sort of famous Norwegian cheese we should know
about? Well, there are famous Norwegian cheeses. I mean, obviously Jarlsberg is exported around the world. It's one of Norway's great cheese exports. It's a lovely, nutty, kind of Swiss-style cheese. A lot of the sort of 20th century cheese varieties that you find, particularly in Norway, have a Swiss or a Dutch leaning or style.
Oh,
because a lot of the at some point, I think in the late 19th century, there was funding for dairy farmers and scientists to go to those countries to learn about cheese, you know, learn about cheese making process from those countries.
Yes.
Before that, you had all kinds of really, you know, quite wacky, pongy fermented cheeses that were just naturally fermented. You know, you had in Norway, we had something called gammalost, which is literally translates as old cheese. And it really is old and pongy. And it was made from storing soured whey milk. And it's very beloved. And it had all kinds of sort of mythical properties, like it was considered sort of Viagra of its time.
That's often the way, isn't it? You find it.
Right.
There's a fee.
Right.
And also, especially when they're quite challenging, like durian in Southeast Asia is considered aphrodisiac.
Exactly.
You know, it's got this very strong smell. It's a very characterful fruit.
Exactly. There's a certain chauvinism attached, I think, to anything that's like challenging to eat. And obviously those are two opposite ends of the spectrum, because gammalost is obviously stored for a long time. It's very pongy. And then you've got Jarlsberg, which is exported outside of Norway and is not a threat to your nostrils. but highly addictive. You know, I get cravings sometimes for Jarlsberg, because I love that nutty taste and I love the sliceability of it. So those are the ones. And then, of course, we have in Norway brunost, which is brown cheese, and that is caramelized whey that has been pressed into what looks like a soap bar. And in fact, many, many years ago, when relatives of my Norwegian family who had were second or third generation emigres to the United States, so they were coming to visit from Minnesota, and they were sort of making this pilgrimage back to the family roots in Sognefjord, where my father's family is from. And they were offered a bar of brunost from my grandparents to try. And they thought it was, in fact, a bar of soap. And they tried to use it as a bar of soap in the shower, and with not very successful results.
Yeah, but it didn't lather very well.
It didn't lather, no. And I think they were a bit perplexed. This is some sort of strange moisturizer. So it's very confusing, I think, to non-Norwegians, because it's not really a cheese. I always say to people, like, don't think of it as like a cheddar-style cheese or, something that you're familiar with. It's a different category. It's kind of sweet and savory. It's got a lovely caramel flavor, delicious on waffles. Like, it's almost a good thing to have as a sort of like a savory accompaniment to sweeter things, you know. So
that's a nice way of putting it. Clever.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
And so there's historically always been very localized cheese production and great variety, even within regions, you know. So like Norway's not a very big country, but across all the Scandinavian countries, you wouldn't have sort of a monolithic industrial cheese that's made and exported the way that you do now. You know, you have with Jarlsberg, or you have with the Danish Blue, for example, in Denmark. They would be, until probably about the 19th century, when the big dairy farms and the cooperatives were launched, a lot of cheese production was really just for the family. It was really about self-sufficiency. Mm. So you'd have these highly localized cheeses that were produced maybe in a matter of a few kilos per farm per year, you know, and they had their own characteristics, because obviously, you know, as you know, with the sort of terroir of that particular region or valley, or, you know, the kind of grass that the animals would feed on, there'd be great variety between even those highly localized.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, it's such a tantalizing thought. You sort of mourn that.
Right.
That loss of diversity.
Exactly.
I mean, to, you know, because cheese, yes, it is when you look at cheese, it's so expressive of place because of the nature of cheese, of how it's made.
Yeah.
If the milk is from that place, then you have got a chance to express that place, obviously.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That is a very tantalizing thought. But I mean, that's what's happened in with the 19th, 20th century, is this the move to more sort of a monoculture, I suppose, and more dominant forms.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. So we should keep travelling around. So we started in Norway. Mm-hmm. Where should we go to next then on our cheese journey?
Well, I mean, obviously Denmark is a huge cheese producer, and they have a number, again, also quite a thriving artisan cheese industry that's really grown out of the sort of New Nordic movement, and I think even before that.
Ask about that.
Yeah, so there's a lot, again, a lot of very highly localized artisan producers around Denmark who are producing fantastic cheeses. There was one, actually I was reading a description about, because I haven't been to Denmark since before the pandemic, so I'd like to go back and try some of them, so it's sort of imagining what they taste like. But there's one called Tybo, which is spelled T-H-Y-B-O, and it's a very umami-rich kind of crystallized cheese. So, so slightly hinting towards that kind of Parmesan end of the cheese spectrum. And it has a very buttery taste. You know, we like sort of buttery flavors in Scandinavia. In fact, you know, as you probably know, like butter is highly prized and valued in our food culture. So that sort of flavor is very appreciated.
Quite right, too, can I just say?
Well, I know. I mean, we're partial to butter, but I can understand if someone listening to this isn't, they might think, ugh. But yeah, that's a cheese from Jutland, which is, yeah, so that's, I mean, sort of Sweden, Denmark, that kind of area. And, you know, I mean, there's like so many great Danish cheeses. You've got Rygo Ost. Sorry to any Danes listening to this. My Danish is not very good, which is smoked cheese. And you have all kinds of varieties made from goat's milk to, you know, to cow's milk, and they're sort of different. There's some really interesting ones, like there's a goat's version of the Rygo Ost, which is from Funen in Denmark, and that is supposed to be fantastic. And again, it hints at that kind of very Scandinavian love of curing and fermenting and smoking, and you know, those kind of flavors come into play a little bit.
Yeah,
and it works, of course. It has like a great sort of lateral application, because those are flavors that work with the breads, you know, the kind of really robust rye breads, and the dishes that you get, you know, sort of like big flavors like the dill and the, you know, the spices and the various pickles and things. So again, it's like it's harmonious. Yeah, it's meant to be sort of harmonious within the food lexicon, I guess.
Interesting. And what about Sweden?
And then Sweden also has a thriving cheese industry. I mean, the most famous example would be Västerbotten, which is really delicious. Kind of, someone described it as a dewy cheese, which I thought was an interesting way of thinking about cheese. But it is a hard cheese, but it has a kind of like interesting sort of dewy texture to it. And again, you can get a slight crystallization, so the sort of umami effect of the kind of the maturing process, and it's very savory. It's very good for cooking. So typically in Sweden, you can make something called a Västerbotten pie, which is essentially like a cheese quiche, you know, so it's not that different from what you would imagine in France or other parts of Europe. But again, it's using a kind of locally made product, highly regarded, and it's got lots of flavor. You know, you wouldn't use it, I think, in the same way that you would use Jarlsberg, which is, you know, more like a sandwich cheese, you know, so it's...
So it's a bit more prestigious.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's more valued. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, highly valued.
When people are away from home, you know, do you, the missing of foods, of, you know, foods from your home. I was wondering what, you know, is that something that you know, would you be craving some of these?
Oh, definitely.
These, you know, this cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I, in fact, whenever I go to Norway, or if my father's gone on a visit and come back, he invariably brings some cheese back for me. You can actually get a pretty decent variety in the UK. Now you can get a few Norwegian and Swedish and Danish. In fact, you can get quite a lot of Danish cheeses. They are readily available in most British supermarkets. Swedish and Norwegian cheeses, not so much. So you would find those in more specialized stores, like the Scandinavian Kitchen or La Fromagerie.
Yes.
But even Waitrose now stocks Brunost or Gudbrandsdalsost, which is the kind of milder version of Brunost, the brown cheese from Norway. So there is increasing demand. I mean, I suspect it's mostly expats who live, you know, expat Scandinavians who live in the UK who hanker for that. But
it's a powerful drive.
It is a powerful drive. Yeah, certainly.
The food, you know, the food that you know, and it's got a very, I mean, that's what's so fascinating about cheese and how particular it is. And so, yes. And so that, you know, that particular flavor.
Well, and also of a cheese, sliceable cheese, which is very much like part of the kind of the Skive tradition in Norway, particularly, but also across Scandinavia, that sort of like making your own sandwiches, and, you know, to have a sliceable cheese is really, I mean, one.
When you say sliceable, do you mean like with a cheese slicer?
With a cheese slicer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So rather than cutting.
And also, it's got lovely textures. It's not going to fall apart. It's just going to stay in a nice, pliable slice.
Nice, silky slices, yeah, that don't kind of crumble when you're when you're eating a sandwich. And actually, one cheese that you can't find in the UK, but is inspired by the kind of Dutch Gouda tradition of the sort of spiced Gouda, is Nikkelost, which literally means key cheese. And I'm not quite sure why it's called key cheese, as in like key, a set of keys. But it's essentially a Dutch Gouda style. Actually, it's not really a Gouda style. That's not quite right. It's milder than a Gouda, but it has cumin and clove, sort of cumin and clove like cheese.
Wow, cloves are powerful.
Very powerful. Yeah, they're the kind of they're the background flavors, so they're not as dominant. You definitely taste the cumin, and then there's just a hint of that medicinal taste of the clove. And it sounds odd, but it's really delicious. It's so good on sort of fresh made, homemade, you know, wholemeal bread or rye bread. And I just love that. That's the sort of taste of home that,
How lovely. Yeah. But if I wanted to ask you, given you're a food writer, you know, what are the ways that, that, you know, you enjoy cooking with cheese? Are these sort of Scandinavian's way? Would it be sort of sliced and eaten at breakfast? Was it, you know, or is it put on sandwiches, or what are the other?
It's pretty versatile. You'd have obviously like a breakfast spread where you'd have the kind of classic eggs and butter and cheese and some fresh fruit and then delicious breads.
Right.
So that kind of the sort of aligns with a continental style breakfast, I suppose. And then they're quite versatile, so you could obviously cook with them. I mean, I often will play around with, particularly with Brunost, the brown cheese, because it has this interesting sweet, savory, umami flavor. You can use it in sweet things, so I sometimes put it in like chocolatey bakes, like cookies or brownies, or you know,
brownies.
Like Guinness cake is really good, made with a little bit of Norwegian Brunost, because it rounds out that slight bitterness from the chocolate Guinness flavors.
Yeah,
and then you can obviously Västerbotten, which we've always already talked about, can be used like a sort of Parmesan or cheddar. And it's used in sauces. Some people like to use some of the Scandinavian cheeses, you know, with seafood, you know, so you'll have sort of like a kind of seafood cheese thing going on. I'm not so fond of that. I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to keeping fish and cheese separate. It's sort of like the delicate flavor of the fish and then maybe the cheese afterwards rather than together on the same plate. I mean, it's obviously, if you've got Danish blue, you can do all kinds of things. You could make dips, you could make to have crisp bread with, you could cook, you know, you could have it in macaroni cheese. I mean, you know, anything with kind of, as you know, from any food culture that has cheese, it's about, you know, thinking creatively as a cook and thinking, oh, this, how will this enhance a dish? And, you know, if you use a good ingredient, you can definitely lift a dish beyond the sum of its parts. So it's mixed. People aren't super strict about how they use their cheese, you know.
Yeah.
And you can also make like grilled cheese, you know, with some of the varieties as well. Like you can make grilled Jarlsberg is delicious. It's really delicious when it's caramelized and has a little bit of, you know, extra umami added from the caramelization process. So obviously with the Brunost as well, you would have it on waffles. That, as I mentioned before, that's a kind of classic Norwegian.
I think, is it spreadable, the Brunost?
No, so it's not. It's fudgy. So you'd slice it. So in the Dalsost, I think for a while, La Fromagerie were storing it. They were offering it in their cafes as a example of what you could do with brown cheese.
Fascinating. So, are there fresh soft cheese as well? Is that
You can get. In fact, you can actually get brown cheese in a soft version. So it sounds a bit strange because it's like a cheese paste. And of course, you know, I don't think we should shy away from mentioning Primula, which is cheese in a tube. Yes, Scandinavians have a thing for lots of foods and tubes. Actually,
There's a cod roe paste.
There's remoulade. Yes. There's mayonnaise, and you can get cheese in a tube.
Yeah.
And there's a time and place for that. I have a fondness for the jalapeno version of Primula, just on a bit of crisp bread, because I think that's actually snack.
It's very interesting because as you're talking, you know, you're mentioning the breads and the crisp, and actually that partnership is very interesting, isn't it? That actually would work beautifully. I mean, that you've got very interesting vehicles for cheese as part of your Scandinavian tradition.
With these
beautiful rye breads and the different textures on the crisp bread.
Yeah. I'd say the bread culture is as important as the cheese. You know, you can't really, yin and yang, right? You can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
So they complement each other really well.
either cheese dishes or particular times of year when you might eat a particular, you know, in the midst of their midsummer cheese dish, or is there a Christmas cheese dish or not as such?
That's a good question. I know there is a cheese festival to celebrate the Gammalost, which is the old cheese I mentioned earlier in Vík in Sognefjord, and that's that, which I love the idea of like celebrating an old cheese. In terms of sort of high holidays, I suppose you would serve a good cheese. You might get like a premium version of one of the ones we've talked about, you know, for Christmas or for as a treat. I know that now you can get certain like decorative versions, you know, some that have been pressed into these beautiful shapes, and they're kind of, you know, they hark back to that kind of folk tradition of, you know, lovely lovely designs, you know, really quite ornate designs. So there's that. And then I think the Västerbotten pie in Sweden would typically be served when they have their crayfish party during the summer. So August time. So that's part of the table.
And it sets up the booze. There's lots of drinking, isn't there, with a crayfish party?
Yes.
Lots of schnapps.
Lots of akvavit. Exactly. You need some of the fat to soak up the akvavit. I think that's essential.
Very interesting. Oh, well, lovely. Well, that was a really lovely evocative journey, Signe. In fact, I just wanted to ask you, have you, when you were growing up, are there cheese memories or things that your parents cooked that or used cheese, or did you, when you came back from school, were you given a cheese sandwich or?
I mean, we often had cheese sandwiches. I started making my own sandwiches when I was a teenager because my mother just resented making school lunches. So I started making my own.
Not surprised.
Totally fair enough. And so I would often use Norwegian sliced cheese, like a Nøkkelost or a Jarlsberg or Norvegia, which is another sort of Norwegian Swiss style cheese. And I would typically have it for sandwiches. I wasn't really a cheese at breakfast kind of person. I found it's quite a bit too rich first thing in the morning. As a child, you know, you would generally, and my favorite childhood memory would be the brown cheese on the waffles, Norwegian waffles. Yeah, because that's such a great combination. You have it actually. I'm sort of oversimplifying it. You actually have it with a dollop of Norwegian rømme, which is sour cream, and homemade raspberry jam, which sounds weird, but it works.
No, it's like kind it of good.
Cool I'm flavors, like, no. Sweet, savory, sort of tanginess from the fruit, and then of course the waffle. So it's, it's.
You know, I want this. That's now on my to try in life list.
I can recommend it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, Signe. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming on A Slice of Cheese.
Oh,
take care.
Thank you.
I'm a huge fan of Peter's Yard's crackers. And they go beautifully with cheese. All Peter's Yard's crackers are made in small batches using quality natural ingredients and their sourdough starter, slowly fermented for 16 hours for award-winning flavour and crunch.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard's sourdough crackers. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, and specialist food retailers.
I'm very happy to have with me today, all the way from Norway, cheesemaker Kristin Vagen of Tingvollost and her friend Hanne, who is going to also interpret for her too. Hello to you two.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, Kristin, I was really interested. Your cheese is very famous. Well, one of your cheeses, I should say, Kraftkar. Tell us the story of how you're on a family farm, I think, using your own milk to make cheese, and one of your cheeses went on a wonderful journey. Tell us that story.
Yes, we started Tingvollost in 2003, me and my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And first we produced the cheese in our bathroom, a very small bathroom in my parents' house. And in 2006 we built a cheese factory.
Okay.
We first was in the competition World Cheese Awards in 2011 and won a gold medal.
Brilliant.
And we won medal each year until 2016 when we won the world champion title.
That is quite amazing, isn't it? I mean, I've judged at the World Cheese Awards and I have thousands of entries. And to win that, you know, the overall champion award is a big achievement. because you really are competing with some of the best cheeses in the world. Tell us about the cheese that won, and tell us the, it's called Kraftkar. Could you tell us about its name, first of all?
Kraftkar translates to strongman in English, and it's a nod to legendary farmhand Tore Nordbø, who lived here in this village, who was renowned for his incredible strength and size.
Wonderful.
My grandmother was born in this farm who Tore Nordbø lived in. So it's my family story, this man called Tore.
How lovely. That's very special. And tell us about the cheese, because I'm afraid I haven't tried it. What perhaps we start with, what sort of cheese is it?
It's a well-stored blue cheese, creamy taste, and a lot of taste. It's handmade, and it's a rich taste. Yeah, you should try it.
I know, I'm keen, believe me. So I imagine, and you're making on quite a small scale, are you? And tell me, so your cows, how many cows does your family farm have?
Right now we have 62 cows, and each of them have their own names. So when my father and I talk about the cows, we call them by names.
How lovely.
And the cheese factory is right to the barn, so the milk is non-traveled milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you pasteurize your milk, or is it raw milk?
Yeah, we pasteurize, yeah.
Right, yeah. Your family started making cheese, I think, because there was a change in the laws which allowed farms to make cheese using their own milk. Is that right?
Yes, it was easier to produce. We want to make a job for more of us. My mother and father worked in the farm, and we want me to have a job here as well. Mm. So because of that, we started with cheese. But we didn't know anything about cheese before we started. So we have to learn all from the beginning.
So that is so interesting. I was interviewing another cheesemaker this morning, and she had a family farm and wanted, you know, to make some money and had to learn. How did you and your parents learn about making cheese?
We traveled to different courses also in Sweden and here in Norway. A French man came here to learn us to make cheese.
Great.
We try by ourselves and taste, and our cheeses was born.
Amazing. That is wonderful. I mean, because it's not easy to make cheese. You know, a lot of things can go wrong. Did you and your family find it interesting and rewarding to be making cheese from your own milk?
Yes, it's my mother who is the mother of the cheeses, because my father and I is most interested in the cows and the business, but my mother is very nøyaktig. Yeah, she's specific, and I think the cheese is her baby's, yeah.
So it sounds a good team, you know, with different in the family. If you've got your different ability, that's brilliant, isn't it? Why did she choose a blue cheese then? Or why did you? Is there a big market for blue cheese in Norway?
We produce four different types of cheeses. It's two white cheese and two blue cheeses.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
So the year we won World Cheese Awards in 2016, we also won Super Gold for the other blue cheese, Wiesmann.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
How rewarding. I mean, that is really impressive. And if you're making on quite a small scale, which it sounds you must be, there must be a huge demand, especially when you've won this very prestigious award. Was there just a massive demand for your cheese?
Yeah, and the interest was huge after it. Our mailbox was full, and the phone was ringing. And it was a new beginning after we won.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that can change a business's fortunes. You know, to win on at that level really puts a spotlight on you. Gets lots of people to hear of you.
Yeah, here in Norway, but also in abroad.
Like me.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And have you made changes? Have you, you know, did you have to produce more cheese, or have you just kept it as it was to keep in the way that you did make it before?
We kept it as it was because it's our cows who regulate how big we're going to be.
Yeah.
So we can't be bigger because our barn is not bigger.
Right.
We don't have place for more cows. So, and we don't want to be bigger because our cheese is handmade and it's, I think the quality is not going to be so high level if the size, if we grow more.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And so, and is it good grazing? I mean, you know, the milk is always so important for cheese. So is it the quality of the grass? You know, are your cows fed on the local pasture? And is that a big bit of the flavour of the cheese?
Yeah, we talk about our cheese is tasting of the nature around us. So if our farm has been in another place in Norway, the cheese has tasted different.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's really interesting. Yeah, cheese is such an expression of the land, isn't it? Through the milk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And what is the breed of cow that you're using? Is it a special? Is it a dairy cow that gives good yield of milk?
We have a combination cow called Norwegian Red Cattle, mm-hmm. who is producing milk but also meat.
Ah, interesting. Okay, that's interesting. And obviously milk that is good for cheese making then.
Yeah, we think so.
Yeah, sure. Well, you've got the proof. In Britain, a lot of British restaurants used to have French cheese boards, but now, you know, in the last 20 years, they started to have British cheese boards with a sense of pride. Is the same thing happening in Norway in your restaurant scene?
Yeah, yeah, it is. I think Norwegians is more proud of our own food and also cheese because some years ago it wasn't so much so many Norwegian cheese, but now we have a lot of farm dairies here.
Fantastic. And people are interested, I mean, in buying locally made cheeses and enjoying them. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the quality is high here in Norway. Mm-hmm. Before we won in 2016, Norway wasn't a cheese country, but I think after that we became a cheese country.
Yeah, you're on the map. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So what time does your working day start there on the farm? For the farm?
My children goes on the school bus at 8 o'clock, so I'm going to the barn after that. But I have a milking robot milking all night.
Oh,
so it's okay in the barn when I came here. So we produce milk every hour of the day.
Yeah, 24. And is the cheese made daily or is it or once a week or how does it go?
No, yeah, 5 times per week we produce cheese and we started at 7 in the morning.
Right, wow. And you've got your 4 cheeses. So we should talk, perhaps tell us the names of so we've talked about Kraftkar. What are the names of the other cheeses?
We have a cheese called Mildmester, Mild Master, you can translate it. It's a mild white cheese,
mm-hmm.
And you have Edelfrue, noble lady.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. And it's a type of Camembert, soft, sweet, tasty white cheese, and also Wiesmann, who is wise man.
Yeah.
It's a mild blue cheese. All
lovely.
Our cheeses has their names from Tingvoll's history from the Middle Age. So it's a person behind every cheese name.
And a family behind the cheeses, yeah.
Yeah, also
fantastic.
That.
Yeah, oh, well, Kristen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. That's really lovely to hear your story. And congratulations to your parents for an amazing achievement. It's very impressive.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're exploring the world of Scandinavian cheese. I'm very happy to have with me today, all the way from Norway, Magnus Hufslund of Östergården, cheesemaker in Norway. Hi, Magnus.
Hello, Jenny. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much. And Magnus, I wanted to hear about your family business. I think it was your father who started making cheese. Was he a dairy farmer before that?
Yes, we come from a small dairy farm with only 12 cows milking. And it's been my parents and mainly my father who has been running the farm since, I think it's 1988, I think he took over the farm. Mm-hmm. And in 2007, we started up with the cheese production as well.
What made him start making cheese?
Why we started? We've always been really fancy about how can we put more resources out of the farm? What resources do we have around us? It's not as quite good economic if you just produce the milk in Norway. Sure. Yeah, get paid for all your work. You should have some work on the side as well. And what resources we had good milk. So we, yeah, why not start making the cheese?
So what was the first cheese that your father started making then?
We decided to actually make brie and camembert. Uh-huh. And we decided to make it on the original French recipe, like unstable brie and camembert, which is very, very difficult. And so that's been our like signature cheese since the start.
Oh, that's interesting. And were you involved in the cheese making when it started?
And not quite when it started. I was like 12, 13 years old. Okay.
Yeah, school.
So I was quite young.
Yeah. And we should come on to the fact that you had this amazing win at the World Cheese Awards, where your cheese Faneost won Supreme Champion Cheese in the World, which is pretty amazing. Tell us about that. I think you're the smallest cheesemakers in the sense of this side of the business to win that prize. Mm.
First of all, the Faneost is a Gouda type of cheese. Mm-hmm. And it's aged for around or minimum 14 months before we sell it. Mm. It's been like mainly the cheese we make the most of on this farm now.
That's an amazing achievement, you know, because you're up against thousands of cheeses.
Absolutely. When the Cheese Awards in Bergen, it's the same city as the farm, so that's really fun. Actually,
oh, that's
it was
nice.
Like 3,700 competitors, and my father was standing in the hall of Grieghall and just watching all those cheeses, all those tables, and he was like, "Okay, if I become like top 80." Then I have made a victory for myself, he said. Mm. And it went all the way to the top.
Amazing.
And, yeah.
That last bit is the 16 finalists, aren't they? And they're people champion. Is it 16, I think, at the end? And it's like a really exciting sort of finale where you're watching. They all get points, and so you can see which cheese is doing well. But then another cheese comes along, and it's a chance to win. So it must have been very exciting for your father. And nervous.
Very much. I was not present myself. I was in the army for exercise. So it was, hearing the news in a tent.
Amazing. Brilliant. And I wanted to go back a little bit to talk about the cows. For your cheese to win that prize, you need really good milk to make really good cheese. Tell us a little bit about how many cows do you have? Do you have more cows now?
No, actually, we have the same amount of cows. We only have, maximum 12 cows we can have on this farm.
Well,
because of the area of the grass and everything. So after the win, we had to increase our production. So we actually have to buy some milk from neighbor farms.
Are your cows your own cows? Are they a particular breed? Is there a Norwegian dairy breed that you have?
Yeah, we're using a Norwegian Red, which is pretty common breed in Norway. It's the breed is very good for meat production and milk. So it's like a combination cow.
Yes, very useful. So it's fed what on the grass, the pastures? Is that part of the sort of the magic of the milk in a way? Is it what it's feeding on then?
Yes, you could say everything starts with the grass, I'm usually saying. We are using a lot of like old fields. We are not plowing the fields as you should to increase your and increase the production. We have old fields with like 12 different kinds of grass growing there. We can tell by the milk that we can find the grass in the milk, if you know what I mean.
Do you pasteurize the milk or is it unpasteurized?
We pasteurize. Because of the amount of production, we like to.
Mm. And what made your father go, because if you're making soft cheese, like a Camembert style and a Brie style, then why did your father start making, start making a Gouda style cheese then?
It's like, actually, it was a question about the making amount of cheese. And if we are making Brie and Camembert, it's not quite the market to just make that kind of cheese, if you know what I mean. So we need something more as well. And then we make the Fana Ost. And the word Fana is from the part of the city we are living in. And Ost is, cheese. So it's the Fana cheese, if you want to translate it.
I didn't realize. That's very straightforward. Yeah, good name.
It's pretty simple, actually.
What's it taste like then? Give us a sense of the cheese. So it's a Gouda style. How would you describe it I never have eaten it. So please describe it to me.
I would say it's a very clean taste of cheese. It's like it's no spice in the cheese. It's only the milk and the maturing. I would say it's pretty sweet as they say, clean cheese taste. And it also has the salt crystals.
After you won the award, was there a lot of interest in Norway in having your cheese, in having this, world supreme champion cheese?
Yeah, when just before the cheese awards, we had this customer who bought every cheese that we had on storage. And we were still pretty small at that time. So we had like 150 wheels of cheese Farnhost storage. We sold out everything. We had like 5 cheeses left. And then we won the championship. It was like a war going on to get the cheese in the black market. I think it was like 500 pounds for a 1 kilo of cheese or something.
Oh
like
my
that.
Goodness! And how frustrating, because you didn't have any in stock and you can't just make it. It takes time, doesn't it? It
takes very long time. It takes 14 months. We had one batch coming up like 12 months after, but I had like 5 cheese and the whole world wanted that. Okay, who do you say yes to? Who do you say no?
Yes. Well, hopefully things have stabilized now. So basically since, and the win was, it, I think, it was it 2018, is that right?
2018, yes.
Yeah. Things that you've upped production as you're using what milk from local farmers then that you know and trust. Mm. So how many cheese or how much in terms of weight
Now we are making like 20 tons in the year of Farnhost, I think.
Right.
Before the cheese awards, we made like maybe 5 tons. So it's been doubled up sometimes.
Yeah, that's my thing. So you're now working with cheese. How do you find that, Magnus? Do you like the world of cheese that you're working in now?
It's very exciting. Not so good at the production part. An expert in how to make the cheese, but I'm trying to make the business go as usual. My job is mainly the farm work and administration. Join the production.
And it must be nice for your father. Yeah. It must be very pleased that he's the reception of that cheese. That must be pretty gratifying.
Mm. It is. It is. He's now moved out of the farm, and I have moved into the farm. And so it's a lot going on the farm right now because we changed our houses like only 3 months ago. So So it's a lot going on.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's an amazing story. Mm. So, yeah, congratulations to you all. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Magnus. Bye-bye.
Mm. Bye-bye.
A number of leading food businesses stock and use Peter's Yard crackers. One of these is Grape and Fig, the first grazing platter company in the UK. Founder Toria Smith turned a personal passion project into an innovative business. Find out more about Grape and Fig over on the Peter's Yard website on their speciality spotlight section.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're exploring the world of Scandinavian cheese. I'm very happy to have with me today from Norway, Bernt Bucher Johannessen, and he's the managing director of an organisation called Hamen, a Norwegian trade organisation responsible for rural tourism and farm produce. Hello, Bernt.
Hello, Jenny.
Bernt, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us. Trying to find out more about Scandinavian cheese, which I'm afraid to say I know very little about. Tell me, what is the Norwegian cheese scene? Give me a, paint me a picture of it.
Well, first, thank you for having me, Jenny. It's great to be here. Norwegian cheese has gone through a tremendous, interesting revolution together with other countries in the Scandinavian area. And, it's been a multitude of producers. We were used to have, one main producer eating all kinds of semi-goudas and hard cheeses. 150 years ago, things were different. But for the last 25 years, there's been a tremendous development when it comes to producers and all different kinds of cheeses, be it a Dutch or Swiss or French or other
British
kinds of orients from of the cheeses.
That's interesting. So do you have in Britain we have, big companies producing on a large scale, but we also have, in my decades as a writer, I've seen the rise of smaller scale craft producers, farmhouse cheeses. Is it in Norway, did that farmhouse cheese tradition continue, or did it get sort of broken and then start up again?
In a way, it was broken 100 years ago, and it was taken up 20 to 30 years ago. Actually, you were not allowed to make cheeses at your farm.
Really?
No. So you had to apply, and then all the regulations was fixed so that you could start up your own production at your farm. There was economic incentives to start up your production. And then after, 10 years' time, the market answered and people really enjoy farm-produced cheeses. So things have changed.
Brilliant.
And being in a very small country when it comes to the population, it's 5.5 million, it's half of London maybe. we have almost 100 artisan cheese producers and almost 350 cheeses. So it's great.
So is there sort of taste for cheese in a way? It sounds like there is. I mean, do people enjoy eating it? Do they eat it? Would people, in the way that, in France, people would often have, cheese at the end of their meal. Is there a tradition in Norway of enjoying cheeses?
Well, I can't say for the last decade or so, it has been a tradition. But when it comes to the tradition of gastronomy and history of food, it's a far little populated country. We have few people and it's scattered around in a vast countryside. And the tradition when it comes to food is quite different now these days than it was 100 years ago. So when it comes to really this French way of eating cheeses, they are not very familiar with our way of doing it. But things have changed really the last 25 years, yes.
Fantastic. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to make this episode about Scandinavian cheeses was because this autumn the World Cheese Awards are coming to Norway again, which is very exciting for everyone, I think. So, Bent, you were very involved in fact, Norway, we should point out, has twice won a Norwegian cheese. has twice won the World Cheese Awards, which is pretty amazing. Again, that is a massive achievement. And I was judging at them last year, and the scale of entries is phenomenal. You know, it's thousands of entries from around the world. So to make your way through to the top as the supreme champion is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And you were very involved in this, Ben. Tell us what happened.
I work for the local producers, for the farms that is interested in producing different kind of produce out of what they're producing at the farm, being it cider or cheese or ham or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it came quite normal to me to see, to find tools for the small producers to compete towards the larger producers and the really big ones. And then the market budgets for farm cheese producers are quite small, of course. And they need to find other ways to do it. And then to take part in competitions would be one way of getting the attention that you need to get the customers to know your cheeses in the market and in the shops and wherever it's sold. So I experienced the World Cheese Award back in 2015. It was 2014 when I was so happy or lucky to stay in London for 2 years. So I thought that, well, why not? Let's bring some of the cheese producers to London to understand the cheese scene here in Great Britain. And then it was very interesting, actually. So then we having them entering the competition, and then suddenly I saw that this competition was moving out of Great Britain to Spain and to the San Sebastian, this
wonderful
beautiful
city.
And then I had this crazy idea of, well, if they're going to Spain, maybe I shall ask them to come to our country then.
Brilliant. Isn't that interesting? That's, good thinking. I mean, it's really interesting the way that it moves around. They always move around the world. But see, let's get back to the winners. So one of the, was that San Sebastian that a Norwegian cheese
won? That's right, yes. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Tell us about the cheese and the maker.
It's at that time, it was quite a normal, standard Norwegian farm cheese producer, quite small. Tingvollost is the name, at the north west coast of Norway. Quite large milk producer when it comes to Norwegian standards.
Right.
But they had exploited the possibilities of doing something more with their milk, a high quality milk producer. And then they were starting to produce different kinds of cheeses, some hard cheeses and this blue cheese. So it's some kind of Norwegian version of Roquefort.
Amazing.
And it had a great success nationally. But the really breakthrough came after they won in San Sebastian in 2016. Yeah. So
it puts you on a map when you win like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was, and especially because it's not only like myself working in the restaurant business for 30 years, we knew about the interesting producers around the country. But for the main public, they didn't know. And so actually it was a really breakthrough through all the Norwegians having national, international winner of a cheese, acclaimed cheese competition. So it was really a breakthrough for Norwegian cheese, not only nationally, but also internationally. So
fantastic.
It's been a great success.
And tell me, Sue, and then what year did the World Cheese Awards come to Norway?
In 2018 to the city of Bergen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I asked John Farron at the Guild of Fine Food about this crazy idea of bringing it to this not so very known gastronomic country called Norway. And after a while, he thought about it and happily for us, he said yes.
Great. And again, there was a Norwegian winner, wasn't it, that year?
Yeah, that was really special. I think nobody would see that coming, another Norwegian winner. And, it was really great. Different kind of type of cheeses. The producer was situated just outside of Bergen, hard cheese, really great cheese, but a very different type. Yeah. Of cheeses, Ostegården, Farmaost. It's Norwegian names, of course, but it's a lovely cheese.
Isn't that fantastic? Cheese is such a diverse food. I mean, that's what's fascinating, isn't it? And when you watch those, that final 16, they're all so different from each other, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
And then, so you really don't really know which is going to win. It's not a clear-cut thing because it's just a lot of subjectivity in a way. You know,
yes,
they're all fantastic.
It's all about taste.
And
taste.
Yeah, what are people going to, what are the judges going to like, you know, on the day? And so are you looking forward to, there must be a lot of logistics involved in hosting something, an event like that. Is it, I mean, a lot of work behind the scenes?
Yes, of course it is.
Yeah.
When you have to work or so happily to work with so professional organizers like the Guild of Fine Food, it's no problem.
Yeah, they're pretty expert, aren't they?
They're
amazing.
After 30 years of doing this wonderful competition, they are. So yes, but we have a national cheese festival with also international participation in the festival that surrounds the World Cheese Awards.
So nice.
So yeah, it's a lot of cheeses, indeed, 4,500 or something. So it's a lot of it's like an Olympic for food in a way. Yes,
it is. Yeah. And a gathering of amazing cheese people from around the world. You know, it's quite remarkable. So thinking back to that winning of the World Cheese Award, a Norwegian cheese winning, and that obviously got a lot of interest and got the imagination perhaps of the Norwegian public and a sense of pride in Norwegian. Do you think the Norwegian cheese scene is progressing now? It's won twice.
Indeed, yes. There has come more and more producers to the market, more participation in the World Cheese Award, focus on quality, also diversifying their types, not so that they are thinking, oh, I can make a blue cheese, then I can win me myself also. No. Yeah. So they are producing all kinds of cheeses around the country. So, and people get proud of their produce, their locals, their neighbors, and it spreads. So yes, I think it's a very good thing, not only for the cheese producing community, but also for the whole gastronomic interested people of our country.
Yeah.
And also for all kind of farm produce that they can see that, well, my neighbor is a very good milk farmer producing milk, but also I being a fruit farmer producing ciders or ham, there is a potential for what I'm producing that I didn't expect.
Yeah,
so actually it gives you a perspective that you can see that from a very small country, you can have a quality in the raw materials of what you produce that can take you that as far as this for this cheese or whatever it is that you're producing.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, and food, you know, good food is a very powerful thing in a way, isn't it? It's fascinating. So,
and it had profound implication for both producers. Now, I just heard that they are exporting a lot of Kraftkar to Spain. And Spain is a country of cheese traditions that is much older than we have been producing cheeses. And a lot of Kraftkar is sold around Spain. And I also heard that the chains for Farmhouse after 2018 was profound. The son of the farm, he said, yes, I think I will take it over from you. And his father was, of course, very proud. And so he had profound implication for a winner to take part in.
Fantastic. Isn't that a great story? Good. Well, all the best with this autumn of the World Cheese Awards this year. And
thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, Ben. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jenny.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Thank you so much for listening to A Slice of Cheese. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, it would be lovely if you could rate us on wherever you found this podcast. It will make such a difference to us. So I hope you'll enjoy us again. Thank you very much.